check that out.
Yeah, I've never heard them.
Internet famous.
Yeah, so I have turned on the recording. welcome everybody. This is the stage management kind of more hands-on workshop. We did a panel a couple years ago where we talked more generally about stage management, and the feedback we got was that people thought that was interesting but were interested in a more hands-on technical workshop too. So that's what this is. We're going to introduce ourselves, and then we'll have you introduce yourselves just very briefly so that we know who is in the audience and why you're here and what you hope to learn. I'm Malka Key. I have stage managed, I think, 7 shows here. I also stage manage for the Gilbert and Sullivan Very Light Opera Company. I do not have a degree in stage management. My mother is a union stage manager in Milwaukee, so I grew up with a lot of stage management around, but I was not formally trained in stage management. I did do a lot of stage management for a student theater group when I was in college, so that was what I did before I moved here.
I'm Erin Greenvita. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, Montana, so I didn't have a lot of theater opportunities, but somehow I found myself going to college for theater at the Concordia College in Moorhead. I studied there. I kind of dabbled most of the years I was there, and then senior year, they're like, you need a thesis, and I was like, well, I'd love to do directing, but that has the most competition, so I was like, all right, stage management, I'll do that for the first time ever. And then I ended up stage managing 2 different shows that year, and I was like, hey, I can do this, I kind of like this. So then I moved to the cities, and I've been stage managing since 2010 in the cities, freelance, done Lakeshore, here, Chameleon, random theaters. So that's kind of how I found my way here.
I'm Brianna Skoranek. I have been stage managing in the Twin Cities since 2010 as well. I'm also not formally trained, but I grew up in a theater family. My dad is a director, my mom's a costumer, my sister is an actor, so I'm a stage manager.
Gotta fill that slot.
You know. But I love it. It's probably one of my most favorite jobs. I've worked here on several shows, Lakeshore, primarily at Shakespeare and Company up in White Bear Lake. Minnesota's longest outdoor classical repertory theater, and a company called Shadow Play back in 2010. I'll get this off. Yes, technical. There's that. During the day, though, I'm a preschool teacher. That's what's exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a speech and language pathologist.
I'm a presentation team lead at Target. That's my exciting day.
So that's
job.
The other thing we do.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's go around, maybe start in this section and go, I don't know, by row. Maybe we'll go by row.
Sure.
So if you want to.
I'm Shalevsky. I'm a computer program, semi-retired. I love going to theater, and when I was 15, I was an assistant stage manager for a community theater production.
Great.
My name is Toya. I've been a art teacher for 12 years, and I just moved here 3 months ago, so I'm trying to figure my way out.
Yeah. Oh. I'm Trevor. I run a sound and light production company. I was the production manager at a theater up in Fergus Falls, and I just moved down here this summer. And I've never stage managed, but I want to learn more about all the aspects.
I'm Pat, and I work at the Mayo Clinic in the surgical area, and I'm just intrigued by the idea of stage management. I've read about it, and you see things on TV, but I've never actually experienced the reality of it, so I'm intrigued by that.
I'm Ben. I'm a manufacturing engineer. I don't have any experience with stage management, but I've done a lot of acting when I was a lot younger, and it sounds really interesting.
I'm Ryan. I got a generalized theater degree from St. Ben's, did a little bit of stage managing. With my professional experience, moved some costume and assistant stage managing, so just looking to see what's out there for professional.
I'm Summer Day. I'm still in high school. I'm in 11th grade. I do the theater at my school. I was assistant stage manager for our play lab. last year, and I'm doing soundboard for a play right now.
My name is Lori. I was convinced in high school that I was going to do theater for life, and then life happened, and it didn't happen. So it's been about 15 years since I did anything with theater, and then last year I did props for a community theater, and then this year I was thrust into stage managing for like two different performances, and I thought maybe I need to learn what I'm doing. Figure out what I'm supposed to be doing. So I'm here.
I'm Seth. I did a lot of theater in college, and I've never stayed in it before, but it's not really interesting. So.
My name's Hope Jewell. I'm 16 years old, and I stage manage at Lake Wilmer High School.
I'm Cheryl Renee. I am an actress and musician, and I've just decided I want to learn as many backstage, behind-the-scenes things as possible, just so I'm more versatile. That's why I'm here.
I'm Jimmy Wheeler. I've been stage managing for 3 years at my high school.
I'm Veronica. I worked with Jamie, and I've worked on the curve, an assistant stage manager for the curve. And I'm also interested in just learning about the
I'm Dan. I do a little bit of theater tech here and there, mostly for improv shows. And so I'm just going to learn more about theater.
This summer that my longtime stage manager is in his movie, and I have to win them doing it. So,
I'm Maddie. I have been a full-time stage manager for a number of years. I've been here a couple times stage managing. Steve told me to
My name is Tim. I stage managed a show when I was in grad school for acting. But that's the only stage management I've ever done, so I'm interested to learn more about it. Work with reality before. So I'm interested to know what makes a tank.
A lot.
I'm Colleen. I'm a landscape architect for the City of Minneapolis Parks, and a friend asked me to stage manage a friend's show. No idea what I was doing, so I'm hoping to learn today what I could have done.
My name is Naina. I am a human being and a student and a painter, etc. I recently volunteered here at TRP, and I'm curious as to how artists manage to manage artistic projects in general. So I think anything that I learned here could be applied to any type of project.
Mm-hmm. Did we hit everybody?
I think so.
Yeah. So the format is we're going to go through these slides that you have in your handout and talk about, this is sort of structured around different types of paperwork we do, essentially, different kinds of record keeping we do, different kinds of communications that we do, and we're going to go through the slides, and then we're hoping to have a lot of time for a hands-on portion. We have a lot of paperwork set out on tables over here, so we will be there. You can pick through all of our stuff and ask questions. You can certainly ask questions while we're doing the slides, but if your question is more of a, you know, what does that really look like kind of thing, you will get to look through examples of all of these things. So feel free to either ask as we go or ask when we're looking at the things. Yeah? Is that good?
Yeah.
That didn't go? Try hitting arrow.
It's not.
No?
No.
Really? There we go.
Yay.
Okay. Okay, so we structured this chronologically. So kind of from the very beginning of the process through to the end of the process, more or less. So one of the very first things that happens is a production meeting. Depending on the theater company, you may be running the production meeting, or a production manager might be running the production meeting. The director might be made mostly the person facilitating the production meeting. Regardless, you're probably going to be taking some notes at the production meeting, and they might be the official notes for everybody or just your own notes. But you want to make sure that every department is represented. Lighting, sound, set, costumes,
props.
Dialect, props. Did you have a question?
A production manager,
this is the sort of role that depends on the company. A production manager handles various parts of the production process, like a lot of times finding the people to do, finding the designers and hiring the designers.
And the money.
Yeah, and handling more of the budget aspects. Not every company has a production manager, but like as a stage manager, it's not my responsibility to find a costume designer. But it might be the production manager's responsibility to actually find a production manager.
Could also be called an artistic director.
Sometimes,
at some places.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A producer.
Similar.
Yeah. So it may not be you, and companies structure things differently. If you don't have a production manager, you may end up doing some of the things that a production manager might do in a company that has one. You're going to want to look at those different departments. Those are going to vary depending on the show. For example, if you're doing outdoor theater, you might not have a lighting department. And you also want to make sure that you're taking notes on behalf of anyone who isn't able to attend the production meeting. So if the lighting designer is not able to be at the production meeting, you might want to be asking those questions like, will we be using these aisles and stairs? Will we be using that platform up there? Do we want lighting just to the edge of the stage, or are we going to want lighting all the way down the VOM entrance to the curtain? So those might be the kind of questions that you're asking on behalf of somebody who isn't there. Another thing is scheduling, the rehearsal schedule, starting to think about the tech schedule. You may not have a full tech schedule at the first production meeting, but just starting to think about those things. And the needs of the tech rehearsal. Will you need to run microphone cords or speaker cords somewhere on the stage? Or is that not an issue? Also a schedule for which props will you need in rehearsal. So will you need a tee set for rehearsal? Or will you need a fan? Did you have a question?
No.
Oh, okay. So sometimes that will be the real prop, but a lot of times that will be a stand-in prop. So which things do you need? Which things are a priority for having the real prop or costume? It may be a priority to get the real shoes that the actors are really going to be wearing because of you want to make sure that they work for the dancing or something like that. It might be a priority to get the real cape that's going to be used because that affects the choreography or the blocking or the fight scene. So thinking about some of those things, thinking about scheduling costume fittings and all of those kind of things that happen along with the rehearsal process. And then also thinking about department gray areas, like is this a costume or is this a prop? Are the purses going to be supplied by the costume department or are the purses going to be going to be provided by the prop department? Or is this table going to be props or costumes? Are all of these things that are going to be along the top of the shelf things that the set designer has in mind and has a supply for? Or do they want the prop designer to be coming up with these things around the set, like set dressing, things that might not be touched or used but are part of the set? So thinking about all of those planning things. Just clarifying other things like rehearsal room setup. Who is going to be putting the tape on the floor that shows where things are in rehearsal if that's something that you're going to be doing. So just coordinating all of those things that you need to get started with the rehearsal process. And sometimes this meeting is a long time before rehearsal starts, then sometimes it doesn't happen until much closer. So the kinds of issues you can decide at that first production meeting are going to depend on whether rehearsal starts 6 months from now or rehearsal starts 6 weeks from now or rehearsal start next week. So, yeah. Are there any questions on that part of the process?
You can also have multiple production meetings.
Absolutely.
during the process. So
yes.
You'll do updates on how far people have gotten, which we'll talk about probably later on. But yeah, you don't just have one
right.
And that's it. You get together more than once just to make sure everybody's on the same page. Or did you have? I thought I saw a hand almost.
So this
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Usually the set designer will have like a rough sketch of like what it's going to look like, so then the lighting designer can see, oh, okay, so there's going to be this big object in the middle of the stage or something that I'll have to light around, which is good for them to know. So it's kind of, everybody comes together and sees what everybody's been working on individually with the director usually. Any other? Yeah?
Do production meetings then continue up to when the person starts?
Yes.
Is the frequency?
Yeah, it depends on how many you can get, but usually there's at least 2 per show, but sometimes 3. There's always usually one closer to Tech Week, which we'll talk about later on.
It's not like a weekly production.
No. No, nobody can get together that frequently. Schedules are very hectic.
Everyone's
but yeah. sometimes it does depend on whether your production team sees each other on a regular basis. If you all work in the same building, you know, more full time at a theater or in an academic department, then you might have less need for it than if you all never see each other except in a production meeting or by email. So those things can affect how frequently you have production meetings and also how long those production meetings end up being.
Good.
Yeah.
All right, first rehearsal is the next line. Got it? Sweet.
On it.
So this is your first experience with the actors. You got to usually email them beforehand, let them know like when things are happening, and then they give them your contact information. It's kind of important here to establish your rules with them too. Like if they're going to be late, make sure they text you or call you. Like give them all those ground rules so that they know that's what you expect the first rehearsal. And then usually there's a first read through at the first rehearsal, but not every theater does one, but usually that's kind of what you do. In my experience, the first read through is a great opportunity to like mark down anything that's listed in the script, like props and things. I just underline them as we're going through so that I have it for later, which I'll talk about later for your props sheets and scene shifts. But this is usually when I get my props written down. And then some theaters expect you to make a prop list for the props designer, but some expect the prop designer to make their own props list. So it just depends. That's also something in your contract that you'll go through. You can see what they expect from you, the different theaters, and then also ask what they expect. Because it might not be in there, but they could expect it because they've had it in the past. And then you take the time to confirm people's conflicts. So they've given you conflicts that you've collected from their audition forms, and then you make a conflict calendar and then present that to everybody and make sure those conflicts are correct and take any more, because this is how the director makes their schedule. So if people start adding conflicts or things are popping up, that happens. But this is a good opportunity to be like, all right, here's our conflict calendar. If you need to add anything more now, the first rehearsal is when to do it. Understand that life does happen, but this is when you get your conflicts in, and hopefully no more are added. And then I always like to take down people's allergies for food or clothing at that point for the props designers or the costumers, so that if they start designing something and there's an edible food, we know, like, oh, this person's allergic to peanuts. You can't have peanut butter or jelly sandwiches in the show. You have to come up with something different. They can work on that sooner than later. Contact sheets. Make sure to have everybody check their information on the first rehearsal. I also make sure that first email I sent out, I say, did everybody get it? And if you didn't, we need to figure out why. Was your email wrong for my contact sheet? We need to fix it. And this is the opportunity for you to go through your whole contact sheet and make sure everybody's information is correct and accurate, so that you can also contact them when you need to, and they can contact you. And then contracts, you might not be the one handing them out, but you can help kind of gather and organize them with the production manager or the artistic director, just making sure everybody gets those turned in. Not all theaters have a very, like, contracts for everybody, but usually nowadays I see contracts at all theaters that I work at, I think. I think most, even if you're not getting paid, they still like to have like a liability waiver kind of thing, contract. So there's always usually something to have people sign on the first rehearsal. And then she discussed the taping of the stage a little bit. It just depends on the theater. Some, your rehearsal space, you can't tape because it's being used for other purposes. So you should figure out, is this a space that we can tape, or is it a space that we have to just kind of remember there, or put down like a little piece that you can pull up later, that sort of thing. And measurements can usually be taken by the costumer that day, which you can also help cycle through all the people, get them to her, be like, oh, that person's sitting, send them to the costumer. That person's sitting for a while, send them to the costumer. Or going through your sheet, oh, they haven't gotten so-and-so, should send them off to the costumer. Or be like, oh, we're missing these two people today. You'll have to get them at a different date. Just keeping track of where people are is important for that first rehearsal, too. And then script sign-outs sometimes happens, mostly with musicals, because those usually have to be returned. So you have to make sure everybody signs out a script so that they can sign that back in and usually get a deposit back, depending on the place. But yeah, the first rehearsal is just a whole lot of information is tossed at everybody, and you just have to keep it all organized. That's pretty much the gist of that. Any questions about first rehearsals?
Mm-hmm. What's the relationship between the stage manager and the director? Because mm-hmm. some of this stuff seems to be the director relating to the actors in particular.
Yeah, these are things you do so that the director doesn't have to do them. Like everything we list here, these are things that the director shouldn't have to worry about, at least in my experience. For the director, it's getting the play represented on the stage that they want it to be. So they're not in charge of collecting contracts or general information.
So you're an agent of...
Yeah, we heard the cats. And the director just gets to play with them. If that makes sense.
And some of these things really do depend on the director and what their preferences are. Some directors really like to get into nitty-gritty of things. Some directors enjoy, you know, so like on one extreme you might have a director who comes in and says, this is my detailed rehearsal schedule from right now until we open, and this is my plan. And then you might have other directors who say, you know, can you make a rehearsal schedule that hits all of the scenes? Like, can you do that? And so it really just depends on the strengths and weaknesses and interests of a given director, too. But by and large, this is the kind of thing that if you have a stage manager, typically they are taken care of. And they might be taken care of by another member of the company, too. The producer might collect the contracts.
Yeah, it's just more of assisting
with
those things, making sure that it happens.
All right. Blocking notes and rehearsal scripts. I love this part. This is where you write down what people do. You get a script, and your job is to make sure you write down what all the actors are doing on stage. We're all, I'm assuming, pretty familiar with there's like upstage, downstage, stage right, stage left, that sort of thing. So it's your job to write down what everyone in the cast is doing. Hopefully in a way that makes sense for you in your own script, so that in the event that there's an actor missing that night, you can go back and you can tell them what they missed and where they moved and that sort of thing. The biggest problem with that is that it often changes. Things don't always work out the way that the director thinks in their head, and so the best advice that I would have for you is to use a pencil. That is your best friend. An eraser is your best friend. And then it's kind of up to you what works best for you. I typically like to have a one-sided script where I can write a lot of notes or draw maps on one side, and then if I need more detail and that sort of thing, I can plug in arrows or whatnot. Some people use post-it notes and they stick them in, and then they can move them where they need to or get rid of them if they need to. We definitely have examples of them over on the tables, which you can see later. The other things that you can think about while you're doing your blocking, one thing that we've kind of experienced here is if you're thinking about stage managing for theater in the round, it's in the round. And so there is no stage left and stage right. And so figuring out, do you need to block based off of furniture? Do you need to block based off of bombs or sections? And figure out what really makes sense for you. The actors are going to be writing down in their script what they're doing, but your job is to make sure that you have the master movement list, which will change. And again. Another kind of tip that I have too, because it's going to be very quick, especially if you have a very large cast, I tend to like to abbreviate actors or characters' names, you know, like Anthony A with a circle around it, just so that makes sense for me and that's consistent through the whole script. And again, this kind of changes with your space, how many people you have, and that sort of thing. I'm not as familiar with like dance blocking. But that's kind of your basic blocking.
So I usually put musicals, I put my blocking for choreography in a notebook and not in my script because there's just so much. Mm-hmm. And then I have my notebook and I can refer to it. And then I might put like some smaller notes in my actual script. Mm-hmm. So then the girth of it isn't just like my book would be just full of blocking if I put all of the choreography in it.
Yeah. I've done that before with, like, stage combat. If there is, like, a sword fight, I'll have, like, a whole separate notebook where all of that lives so that I can either make copies and it's not messing up the flow of my script. But I think that kind of covers at least what you need in your rehearsal script.
You can also use photos and video. There are people who will, if you have a 40-person final pose that you need to capture quickly, you know, you can take a photo. Or if there are people missing from a dance rehearsal, it can be helpful to take a video of the dance and share it with them, because then they can get caught up to speed a little bit faster before they come back. So there are technology things you can use too.
Yeah. Any questions?
What, in your experience, has been the best common denominators for being able to get a hold of everybody quickly? Is it usually through, like, if everybody's Facebook, if everybody's email, text message, what tends to work the best when you need to get a hold of somebody and they're not always able to get a hold of them?
Are you thinking of the whole cast at once or, like, individuals?
Yes. Both, please.
I lean heavily on email,
yeah.
Just because I feel like most people will have it on their phones and they'll be with them. Not everyone looks at group texting and that sort of thing. So email is something that I rely heavily on. But if they're not responding to that, I might also shoot them a text.
Yeah, I've had some shows that are really small and will have Facebook group, like chats or whatever, which works out okay. But you don't always have Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So that's the same with email. If it's something like emergency, like I have to cancel this rehearsal, something happened, I'll do phone. I'll text or I'll call.
Yeah.
Because email is not fast enough.
How many, like, when you're collecting contact information, how many, like, backup or numbers do you normally take down? Or
go for cell phone, usually. If they don't have a cell phone, which does happen, surprisingly, still. I would take home phone, but yeah, just you did that. We went over that when you'd come in a little later, but yeah, making sure that everybody's contact information is accurate the first rehearsal is crucial, because if they're not getting your emails after that, and I didn't say this before, kids with parents, making sure you have every parent's information is so important, because you could be sending information to one parent, but they're separated, and the other parent isn't getting this information, so you need to make sure you have all of the information so that they're getting any rehearsal information.
And at the first rehearsal, I mean, you can tell them how to contact you, but it's also a good time to set up, you know, how you will be contacting them, you know, to say, we will be sending information via email. If you're the sort of person who normally goes weeks without checking your email, you're going to need to change that during this rehearsal period. Yeah. So that's an expectation you can set up. I don't think I've ever done a show with somebody who didn't have an email address in the last, you know, 8 years or something.
That's,
yeah,
that's not a thing anymore.
Yeah. Good. Cool. Yeah, so you are in every rehearsal, but the designers are not. So that's kind of the crucial thing about rehearsal reports, is that you are relaying the information that comes up in rehearsal to everybody else who is not at rehearsal. The designers, some of the other staff of the theater company, and you're also keeping some notes for yourself and the director about things like what was worked on, what still needs to be worked on, you know, questions that you still need to figure out. So that's kind of the big picture of rehearsal reports. And we send them out by email. So you'll have an email list of the people who need to receive them, and then you'll just send them out after each rehearsal. So that's the big picture. You might be telling them that there's a new prop, like we've decided that there are going to be bananas in this scene where there weren't bananas before. Or we might be changing something, like it was going to be bananas, but then we realized it has to be apples. Or it could be that there's a sound effect that you figured out, or it might be that you figured out how long a sound effect needs to be. Like, this music number is going to need to be this long for the sound designer. You might have figured out where a special is going to be, a special light that comes down on an actor. You might have realized that you thought you weren't going to use the upper platform there, but actually you are. So those are the kinds of pieces of information that the designers need to know. And so we usually divide up the rehearsal reports into departments. So you'll have notes for the lighting person, notes for the set person, so that they can quickly see what they need to know. Something might go into two different notes, and usually I'll just put it in both and say, see the other person, so that they know that the other person is also aware of it. You might have a gray area thing, like a purse or a prop, or a thing that involves two things, like you know, something that needs to go into a pocket. So the prop person needs to know that it has to fit in a pocket, and the costumer needs to know that a thing is going to get put in a pocket. So so that they can coordinate how large the thing is and how large the pocket is. So those are the kinds of things that you would put in a rehearsal report for the designers. You would also want to let them know if you need a new rehearsal piece. Actually, we need more teacups or something like that. You want to let them know, you want to let the theater company know about things that they might need to include in a lobby warning. Or a warning to the audience when they're buying tickets. Is there nudity? Is there fog? Is there gun effects? So the kind of things that would go on a lobby warning in the lobby. I'm pointing for the lobby, sorry. Yeah, it's over there. So the kind of things that would go on there is there smoking. Those are things that the theater company might learn about through, like, maybe a general section in your rehearsal report. And they're also going to want to know how long is the show, because that's very typically on their website. It's something that people ask. So as you're running through the show and you're timing how long scenes run, you can be putting that in your rehearsal report. You know, tonight we ran act one, it was 45 minutes long. Tonight we ran act one, now it was an hour long. So they, you know, there were a lot of dramatic pauses tonight. So that they can, and they know that early in the rehearsal process it's likely to change. And, you know, as you get closer, hopefully those things are stabilizing. But putting those things in so that the theater staff knows about it. And then you also track what you worked on, who was at the rehearsal, what you do need to revisit. You know, we ran out of time for this scene, we discovered a problem with this scene. And you can keep, sometimes it's nice to keep a separate running list for yourself of what those things are all in one place, so that when the director is thinking, you know, what are we going to do in this TBD rehearsal we scheduled next Wednesday, you know, we didn't have something specific planned, it was a catch-all rehearsal, you can say, well, you said you wanted to work on scene two and the dance thing and this other thing, so, you know, are any of those, you know, do any of those seem like a good fit? So those are rehearsal reports. You'll send them out to the designers, to the frequently to theater staff, so that they are kept abreast of what's going on. Questions on those?
Yes.
Only sort of tangentially related, when you're dealing with stuff like, you know, fire in a production, somebody lights a real cigarette, who's technically responsible for contacting the fire marshal? Because I'm assuming that anytime you have fire in a show, you have to clear that with
At the theater. So that would be like a production manager or the artistic director. It would be.
But you have to be letting them know,
right?
Or they're not going to know.
They'll let someone know. Or if you're in like a space that's, you're not a theater that lives in that space, you have to let the theater know, like, oh, we're going to have a gun in this show, but it's a prop gun. So that they know, maybe they have rules again, like where they specifically want it kept, things like that. I've had shows that we couldn't have like a cigarette on stage because they specifically had rules, no cigarettes in this space at all. So it's that's in your report. You send that out, and then whoever's your production manager or whatever will talk to the theater or talk to whoever needs to about it.
Okay.
So you get the information out there, and then it'll come back to you whether or not that was okayed or thumbs down.
Did you want to go and then you?
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you translate the rehearsal reports, or what is the struggle for translation when a chunk of your rehearsals don't get to happen in the space you're performing in?
For the rehearsal report itself, or just the rehearsal process?
I guess a little bit of both.
I would say part of your job as stage manager might be to be keeping track of those discrepancies and kind of alerting the director, and thinking when we get into the space, you know, our first time through the show in the space, here might be some spots that we want to be looking at. You know, when we get into the space before we do our first run, we're going to need to work on like the timing of this entrance, because upstairs, we do actually have an outline painted on the floor of this stage, which is really fortunate in this building. It's great. But it's still different. We don't have a full length of hallway. We have a wall. So if you're trying to time when should the person start entering, you know, from way back there to arrive on this one line, that's the kind of thing that you either need to run beforehand, or just know that the first time you go through it, you're probably going to be stopping at that point and figuring that out. So part of it is kind of mentally or on a list, keeping track of what those sticky points probably are going to be. And that could be something that you put in that section of things to work. Yeah. Did you want to go?
Sure. Something like the comment from before, sometimes when a production uses firearms, it can be pretty tricky trying to figure out where they come from, where they're rented from, the storage, the safety procedures, and the rehearsal process with those firearms. Is it the stage manager's responsibility to follow up with the props master or whoever about all those things, especially for the rehearsal process, or is it more the production manager's job?
The safety of the actors is your responsibility. So you're always in charge of the firearm. So any time you're in, if you're using it during a rehearsal or in a production, you're in charge of. You take it out of the locked box, usually, at the beginning of the day. You show the actor it's empty, and you show them loading it with blanks. You go through all that process with the actors. Like, you're in charge of that process. And as far as getting the gun, that would be the props person. And then they'll give it to you and give you, like, the directions on how to use it. But then it's in your hands, basically.
And you might be liaising between the prop person and, say, the theater staff about rules, you know, about if the building has rules or the company has rules about those firearms, and making sure that what they're obtaining follows those rules.
And everything's safe and kept safe. And everybody feels safe with firearms, because you don't want anybody to feel, like, uncomfortable with a firearm in a show. Yes, there's not a lot of places to not aim at a person except on the bombs.
Sound effects are great.
Yes, but with a gun, you never want to point it at a person. So in this space, you have to pick a bomb to point it, because you don't want to aim it at the audience. But that's kind of your thing. It also, if you notice something in the director's, like, choosing to do something unsafe, you can say, hold up. This is totally unsafe. We should rethink this. Like, don't think that you can't say no to a director if they're being unsafe. Let's just put that out there.
Or suggest that you need, you know, maybe you don't have a fight choreographer for a show, but then the fight sequence is turning out to be a lot more involved than you were anticipating. And and that's something to talk about at the first production meeting, but it could evolve. And that could be a time to say, you know what, I really think that we need to pull in someone who knows about this kind of fighting so that they can train the actors safely, because nobody in this room is specialized for that. Nobody in this room actually has training on how to do this kind of fight safely. So that can be another thing that you're talking to the director about.
Any more? Anything else?
How often have you found that production design elements, other than something that might be like a shift in like where a light goes, like with set design or anything like that? My hope is that most of those major decisions are made before the rehearsal process. But has that, in your experience, been like the changes that you usually lock in by the time you have that?
Are you talking about like the design of the set or something like
so
that?
So like when you're having to like be the liaison between designers, do they usually have their general design by that first production meeting, or how often is that changing and you're having to relay that to the cast?
It can change, but usually there's at least a ground idea that they want. It could come up to, oh, we really wanted like a specific piece, but we just can't find it to rent or something. So then you change it to something slightly different. But it's never like, oh, we were gonna have a pool in the middle of the floor and now we're not, sort of thing. It's nothing super drastic that you would be changing for them. Or the biggest thing I've had is the door on a stage opened. The way that he built it had opened one way, and we're like, man, we would really like it to open the other way. That changed, like, in the process of rehearsing in the space. So that was, like, the biggest change we had to a set was, like, we need this door to open a different way so that we can actually, you know, see this scene change or whatever.
I also find a lot of those things kind of pop up during tech, though, too. Like, once you kind of start getting all the pieces together, I find more of those will pop up at tech.
But nothing super big. Nothing super drastic.
No.
Yeah, you would never change an entire set by then.
No, just small tweaks to
this. Yeah.
And you're trying to anticipate those things, too. You know, you're trying to say, you know, this works great when this actor is wearing pants, but this isn't going to work once the actor is in a skirt, you know. Or, you know, you're trying to help the director have a second eye on those things that do change when you get in the space.
Like, I'm working on a show right now. It's a new piece. So we have lots of creative freedom, which also comes with, oh, we have so much freedom. It's a new piece. But it's like we're trying to come up with this idea of, like, oh, we have this table in the way, but we really want this moment with this big frame coming on. But the table is, like, how can we do it? Can we put the frame on the table? So it's, like, those things get communicated as you change it. Like, oh, we didn't want the full-length frame this for the show. Can you build us a half size frame and for the set designer? So it just kind of develops as you're rehearsing, like the ideas change. But I think every tech designer kind of understands that there is changes going to be made. Like, they understand that their idea is not always the idea that it begins as. It morphs, develops, come up with new ideas. But yeah, should I move on? Some props and props, costume, and scene shifts. This is my, like, bread and butter. Could talk about this for hours if you want. As I said, highlighting and underlining props in the first rehearsal is really helpful for keeping track of props and during scene shifts. So in your script, you underline these things, and then you make your own props sheet for yourself if you want. Or you could wait for the props person to make you one if they make them. Not all props persons make ones that you can actually physically have. Like, they have, like, a notebook with them scribbled in. But if you want your own version, I would make your own. And then throughout the process, you're added props that are not necessarily listed in it. So the director is like, I really want this person to come on with an umbrella in this scene, but it doesn't list it in the script that they have an umbrella. So you would put that in your report, and then you would add it to your props list or your costume list. And then it's important to know when these props come on and off in your script, just like a blocking work notes, so that you can make a shift something. I've got one over there, but I'd usually do two columns that says, like, these are the things that are coming on, these are the things that are coming off, and who's moving them, and who's taking them off, those, that sort of thing. So it's really good to have that breakdown, especially for actors, that they're moving them so that they remember, and your backstage help. It's good to have that. And then, yeah, it helps with pre-show checklists if you have, like, your list of what needs to be on the stage at the top of the show. And this is everything that you need to put away at the end of the show because it needs to be reset for the next day. So I think once you see my little breakdown, it might be easier to understand it, but I think it's really helpful for people. Did you have a quick question?
Yeah.
Sure.
So what would happen if, like, you talk with someone else about, like, getting something and then they don't bring it to you? Like,
are you talking about, you say we need this prop and then the props person doesn't provide,
like,
it?
They forget about it, or like,
like
something
by the time the performances are happening, or just because it's part of your responsibility too, once you've given them, to also keep up with them. That's kind of the production meetings too. You'd be like, all right, here's, like, how's the props list looking? Are you, like, 90% done, 100% done? Like, where are you at? It's like, here's the things that I had put in my report just to double check in case you didn't see them, didn't read them. Like, I still need 10 umbrellas. You know, like, it's that's falls on you to keep making sure that they're going to actually get it. And if they cannot find it, can someone else in the crew find it? Like, usually everybody's got some sort of source that they know that they can help each other out. But, yeah. Then for my scene breakdown, that also just has... Usually I'll have a column that says, like, what scene it is, if it's a musical, what songs are in the scene, and then I'll, second column is, you know, what comes on, what comes off, sort of thing, so that people know what they're shifting for set pieces. I've done shows where I had so many costume changes, I had to do just a sheet of costume shifts in my crew listed for who is changing who, because it was just so many costume changes. And that was separate from scene shift one that I had, where, you know, set pieces would have to move. So it can just depend on what you want to use. Like, not everybody uses the format that I use, but it's just important to have something like that for your crew and for your actors. It's backstage posted, just so that they know what's happening. Where are they in the show? Like, oh, this... We're in the part where this piece is on stage. Okay, great. I know where I am. And I don't... Who comes? Rehearsal plan. Who to call? Which ginger are efficient to work together? I don't know what that note was.
Oh, so this was something that went slightly out of order. This breaks chronology a little bit.
Yeah.
So the scene breakdown is like a list of saying, in this scene, these actors are in this scene. And it just helps you at the beginning of the rehearsal process and throughout the rehearsal process to have those things, because you might say, gosh, we have some extra time at the end of rehearsal right now, what could we work on? And you can really quick go and say, oh, we could work on this. Or you want to say, we've decided we want to work on this, who do I need to email to about needing to be in that rehearsal? And it just facilitates you being able to make those changes and additions easily.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Everybody's on the sheet that has all of your lists of scenes, and then, like, an X if they're in that scene. So you can just go, like, oh, so-and-so-and-so are in this scene together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one on the table if you want to look specifically at what that looks like.
Yeah.
Any questions?
Any questions?
Yeah. As you're adding props that are discovered during the process, how, using your example of an umbrella, you usually just put, we need an umbrella, and then that goes to the prop person, and then they have to come back to the director and say, okay, what kind of is that? Long umbrellas and short telescoping?
If I have that information, yeah, like, I'll be like, if he says we need an umbrella, I'll say, okay, what kind of umbrella?
Okay.
and then I'll put in the note. Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be like, okay, yeah, I'll get you an umbrella, but what kind would you like for them to look for? Does it not matter? It could not matter to them. Yeah.
Is that something, I mean, obviously during rehearsal, the director may say, oh yeah, you need an umbrella, and then they're off.
Yeah, I come back. Yeah, come back to it. Let's write it down. Be like, okay, he said this, or she said this. Come back, director, all right, here's some things that were... I need some clarification before I send out my report, and just clarify. Yeah.
Is that usually when you're able to, or if the director has blocked out like rehearsal time, is that usually include time for you to have one-on-one with the director to catch up or have those notes, or are you basically letting them know they're walking
out? It's usually just, I'll do it maybe sometimes during breaks, if they're just like, chatting, or at the end as people are clearing up, just grab them,
or you email them, scoot out and you're like, wait a minute, I need to know about this umbrella, then you can email the director and say, hey, you know, just to clarify, you know, is this a folding umbrella, does it get wet, what color is it, you know?
Yeah, if they scoot out. I've never had a director scoot out.
I had one experience. So, yeah, most directors, don't just run at 10 o'clock.
Or they're just like, they're like, need anything from me? You're like,
yeah.
Or they're like,
I mean, hopefully
yeah,
you have that check
stuff.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unusual.
Yeah. All right, line notes. This is another thing that you find the best way that works for you. You have a question?
It's about the last line.
Yeah.
So, what if you're like trying to reach out to them, and then they just don't respond to you?
That's when you take it to the production manager or artistic director and say, I just can't get a hold of this person. And then they'll follow up, and it might be a case of that they need to replace them if that's the case. But if you've done your due diligence and you've tried and that there's nothing coming of it, you go to someone higher up and be like, hey, I can't get a hold of this person. I'm worried that we're not going to get the show we want. That's totally within your realm of duties and things that you can do. You can reach out.
Yeah. Okay, line notes. So like I was saying, this is something that's kind of specific to you. You'll find what works best for you. But it's basically, you're going to be marking in your script once the actor starts to get off book, the mistakes that they make in their lines, and then it's your job to relay those mistakes to the actors so that they can correct them, and then they can speak to the script. There's a million different ways that you can do them. Something that I like to do is just circle or underline straight in my script and then go back later and create some kind of a document or an email or that and then send it out. That way I have more time to kind of comb through. Something important to put in there is maybe like if they reversed words or if they flip-flop words or if they added words and give them as much information as you can. It's going to be kind of tricky to do at the same time because you're doing it while they're speaking, and so as quickly as you can write a note about it, the better. But also, if you can correct their mistakes earlier in the process, the better for you later, because once you start telling them, like, hey, you keep saying this word instead of this one, they'll correct it, and then you're not going to have to worry about it further on in the rehearsals. So usually once people start getting off book, they'll kind of let you know, then you can kind of start tracking how they're accurately saying their lines or not, and then letting them know. Question?
You give them documentation even if you just discussed it?
It depends on the actor. If I can just tell them, and then some actors will just kind of remember themselves, but I also just like to save myself and give them a written reminder of it, so that way they can also look back, or if they get home and they're like, oh wait, which line did she say, they have something to look back on. I like to take lots of notes. So that's
off book day.
So off book, usually somewhere towards the beginning of your rehearsal process, your director or you and your director will decide a date where they have to be memorized. or they can't use their script anymore, but they can still call on them. And so that's just what that date references. So maybe a couple weeks into your process, you have to be off book, meaning like you can't use your script anymore. They can still call line, which is kind of that next point, which is related, which is prompting lines. And that's basically when they're in the middle of their line and they forget. Usually an actor will call out line, and then it's your job to feed them, you know, a couple words of that line so they can pick up and keep going. One of my rules that I have that I specify with the actors is that I'm not going to give you the line unless you say line, and that just kind of clarifies, you know, like sometimes they're trying to think of their line and they're not quite sure, and I don't want to jump on them if they're trying to learn it, and so I wait until they actually say the word line so I can give it to them. Another thing I also do is clarify, because sometimes you'll have an actor on stage with them that knows their lines really well and wants to feed it to them, but then it's two voices yelling at them what the line is. And so just to clarify with the other actors, like, I got it under control, like, I'll just be the one saying it. That's also helpful. Did I miss anything?
I just had a thought, but
any other questions about line notes?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my shorthand is usually I put a parenthesis around the phrase, and then I'll put, like, P for paraphrase. So it's just fast. So, like, boop, 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 done. And then I'll put, like, an S for swap. They swap the two words or something like that. And if I have the time, if there is enough time, I can put, like, what they paraphrase. They said, you said while instead of also, you know, something silly like that, where the word is super close, but you just want to make sure that they get the script just right, which some actors can hate kind of that nitpicky, but I'm one of those people who likes to nitpick the script. So it's like, this is what they wrote, this is what we're going to present. So, yeah, that's why sooner the better you can. And if they're totally off rails, as long as you have permission from the director, you'll be like, whoa, that was a mess, like, start over. You guys are, like, way off. You missed, like, a page and a half. Well, let's go back. Because it doesn't do them any good to do it wrong, because then it just gets in their brain wrong.
It's also good if you're giving them line notes or if you're sending it later to tell them the page or the scene.
Yes.
So that they can go back to it. Because it doesn't help just to give them a chunk of a line and highlight what they said wrong.
Yes.
Because then they're going to be like, what scene was that from?
What?
So the more information you can give them, the better. But it is something that happens really quick, and it is kind of tricky to catch. But once you find what works best, it'll be fine. Yeah?
Is there a difference in catch lines between, like, produced script versus, like, created script? Because, like, we do a lot of, like, I'm trying to think of the word.
Like a new work, or?
Yeah, like a company-run play versus
yeah.
A, like, copyrighted production of, like,
I think you need to agree. If you're doing a company-produced or devised script, you need to agree at the beginning what, or maybe you're doing a new play and the playwright is sort of part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some playwrights are open and they say, you know, like, I'm open to making line changes as this new production is going on. My mother was recently stage managing a play that was like that, and sometimes that can actually be tricky in terms of giving line notes, because then, you know, you're trying to figure out if the thing that the actor said wrong is something that you're trying to keep up with script updates. So maybe the actor is saying something different than what was originally in the script, but now the playwright has decided they like that better. So now it's changed. So I think you just want sort of an agreement at the beginning about what the procedure is going to be for communicating those changes and deciding what a change, you know, when a change has become an official change.
Yeah, I mean, most of the time you'll be working on a play that's been written by someone, and you've paid for the rights, sort of thing. So you want to make sure you get it as close to it as possible. But I'm working on a new work right now, and the author is involved. And I think early on in the process, we've really, like, sat down and was like, this is what we'd like to change. And then once we get it to that point, we won't make those changes to the script. So then once I start giving line notes, then this is the script. So it will stay the same, unless it's something really, like, oh yeah, that word needs to be changed sort of situation. But by the time I'm giving line notes, the script should be what the script is, because they need to be able to learn the script.
So what if, like, you're not changing the script, but there's, like, this one word that an actor just can't get? How would you deal with that?
Like, you decide how much it bugs you in the director. I mean, I'm being honest.
How important
right.
is
How important
the word?
Is it? Is it changing the meaning? Yeah. Like, sometimes if you can say, look, the reason this is a problem is because it changes the entire meaning yeah. of the line. Or the reason it's the problem is because the other actor has to repeat back the word that you say, and then yeah. they don't know what word they're going to have to say. Or this is important because it's a cue line. You know, you're leaving off this part of a line, but it's actually kind of a cue line for me, yeah. and it changes the timing of the exit. Like, it changes it from a two-line exit into a one-line exit, and the lights look late. You know, so sometimes there's a really crucial reason why it has to be in there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to give up. I mean, not all actors are going to be word perfect on yeah. all scripts, and you're not going to give line notes once you're in production. I mean, yeah. and so or in performance. So you know, and if you've worked with an actor repeatedly, you may know which actors are those actors, and you may have to triage lines a little bit, or you may have to, yeah, I mean, you can't, not every actor is going to be word perfect on every script, so.
Yeah, it's definitely looking at it and seeing, like, if they don't say it exactly this way, will it change some meaning in the play? And if it does, make that the point to them. It's like, it's not just that I want you to get this word, it's because it's important to this part here, and maybe making that connection for them will help them remember.
You can bribe them too.
They might not remember because they don't make the connection that it's important.
What if they can remember what it is, but for whatever reason they just can't, like, say? Like,
that's acting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just them, but yeah, it might be just try and help them make the connection. Of like, why is this word important? Oh, it's because I need a cue, or it's because, like, later on you mentioned that you love pizza, but you didn't say you loved pizza here. You said you just kind of liked pizza, you know. It's like, you gotta just help them connect to the...
Or if it's important to them, and they agree that, like, it's driving them bananas that they can't say this, maybe they have an opportunity to run that line sequence with the other actor right before they go on, you know, or... Like, they run that line sequence every night before the show. Or, you know, I mean, there are things they can do that might help them. You're just, you know, you can't every time. It won't work for everybody every time. Yeah. But that's an option. I mean, maybe they run that scene really quick, like, in the scene break before that with the other actor.
Or just, if you have the time, asking the director, okay, can they run this chunk of lines? And you'll stop them as they go if they're doing something wrong. Like, can we run this? And I'll just be like, nope, you got that wrong. Like, go back. You know, can we just get this one little chunk? Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting
there. Yeah, so this is, a lot of this overlaps with the previous production meeting. I mean, the point of it is for all of the designers to get on the same page for you to talk about problems, maybe problems that need to be solved collaboratively. You know, this one scene shift is taking too long. You know, do we need to make the sound cue longer? Do we need to change how the costume works? Is it a thing about the set? Like, there are some problems are just a group effort, and some things are just updating everybody. But in addition to the other things, your final production meeting before you get into tech, you want to make sure that you have a really solid schedule about who's in the space doing what when. At TRP, the floor is a big thing. You know, it's one of the biggest elements of the set. People do gorgeous floors. We don't want to drag ladders all over them once they're done. So usually what will happen is, you know, a base coat will go on first, which is fine. Then the lighting people will work. And then once the ladders are off of this part of the stage, then they'll go in and do the nice finished floor stuff. But you want to make sure you have a schedule for that. If there are volunteers, you need to know what that schedule is going to be for volunteer calls. So that's a big thing at Theater on the Round, but a lot of other companies too. And even if it's not volunteers, you're going to want to need that for your paid employees, about when you're hiring people to come in. And then making sure that all of the props that you've been using in the rehearsal room get switched to their final state, making sure you've all communicated clearly about which props are final props and which props are rehearsal props, because maybe the director has been thinking that this vase is just a stand-in rehearsal prop, and the prop person thought it looked great. And the director's been expecting a beautiful new vase to show up any day now. And and this would be a great time to make sure that that has all been nailed down. You know, making sure that those outstanding props maybe that have been lagging, you know, are, there's a plan. And then also, you know, things about costumes. When will we be adding costumes? When are we adding makeup? When are we adding hair? You know, when will we, when is the director, like, seeing the final costume concept? Sometimes people will do what's called a costume parade, where the actors just literally put on their costumes and walk in front of the director. A lot of productions don't do that. A lot of productions just do that where, in a dress rehearsal, the director sees it and hopefully has seen some of these things as fittings and things have been going on, that it's not all a complete surprise. And then making sure that you have communicated to actors, because a lot of times the call, you know, maybe you've been rehearsing from 7 to 10 and actors have been showing up at 6:55 and, you know, leaving at 10. And now it's like, well, we're calling people at 6:30, but you can come earlier if you really need to do a lot of hair stuff. This is when the theater will be open. This is when I will be here. You know, this is when you definitely have to be here. And how late do we expect the rehearsal to go? So making sure that all of those things are communicated to actors. Any questions on that?
No?
Cool.
Oh, boy. Now just the differences between techs. So it's not all these techs happen at every theater, but I'll tell you what they all are. So the paper tech is usually just the stage manager and usually the light designer and the sound designer putting cues into the script. And that is all that is. A dry tech is usually just going through the physical cues so that the director can see them or hear them, so you can sign off, or she can sign off on the cues. If they don't light, they're like, oh wait, I need more light down there for that scene. Can you adjust that before we jump in with the actors? And then the wet tech is when we add actors, which usually can turn into a cue to cue, which is when you go from light cue to sound cue. You go from every cue to cue with the actors, which, depending on the show, can be from like start of the scene to end of scene, or it could have a few in between, or a musical, which can have lots of cues, so it usually just turns into, we're gonna do this number so that I can do all the cues in it. So it just really depends on the show. In some theaters, you might not have all of these types of texts. In an ideal world, it's great to have all three separate from each other. But in my experience, I've had a lot of paper texts that have been just right before we throw the actors in and we do cue to cue. Or we'll do cue to cue, or we'll have actors and be doing lights and sound while they're on stage, just running the show. And then I'll get my cues in my book every day, kind of little by little. And then I'll get like one run through and I'll open the show. So it's like, that's not a normal case. By any means, don't let that scare you. Usually you get your cues in the weekend before. You've got your cue to cue, like a Sunday. And then Monday, it's full-on costumes. Tuesdays, you'll have makeup added. Wednesdays, if there's microphones, you'll add those in. And then Wednesday, Thursday, depending on the place, Thursday might be a preview, you'll have full run. And then the show opens. That's kind of tech in a nutshell. Is there any questions on that?
I guess I would add that cue to cue is really, a lot of theaters, is a rehearsal that you are running more than any other rehearsal, because you have the list of cues, hopefully, in your script. You know, usually the beginning of the show sequence takes like a really long time and you're like, oh my gosh, it's been like an hour and we're still on page one. Mm-hmm. But in general, like once you get into it, it's, you know, you're saying, okay, like go to like this line, the actors shuffle themselves around, maybe the crew helps put the furniture and props where they need to be. You say, stand by for this cue. You run the cue sequence. You let the scene play for just a couple seconds after it. And then you yell, hold, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Everybody freezes. And then you say to the director, like, you know, anything that we need to look at. And, you know, was that good? And then you either go back or you go on. And you're really the person who is orchestrating that. And
it's kind of more for you to get a feel for the show than it is for anyone else. So that you learn where they want the cues to. So it's like, don't be afraid to say, hold, and can we go back and do it again? I know it's like pressure to get it all through the whole show, but you will Doesn't feel like it in the beginning because things can be kind of clunky, but yeah, it's the moment that you get to take and go through the show and get the cues and find where they go and belong. And then the actors can kind of get the feel for where they go and belong as well. It doesn't feel quite as normal as a full run for them, but yeah, it's definitely that opportunity to take to get it.
Create a new prompt book, a clean prompt book for
it? No.
Some people do.
I don't.
And some people convert their blocking scripts to a prompting book.
Yeah, I don't. Do you?
Like make a whole prompt?
Yeah.
Yes. If it's a show that involves like lights and sounds, I like to have a fresh, clean, new script that's very easily legible. I have a couple copies down there too, and we'll talk a little bit more in the next slide about like call books. But I find it helpful just so that I'm not trying to look for cues within all my blocking notes.
Yeah.
But definitely during tech, I'll just write everything in one book, and then at some point in the wee hours of the night, I'll switch it over to a fresh, clean book.
Yeah.
So do the scripts sometimes have like, if you're like, this sound should be in this place, or do you have to decide?
That's the designer.
The designer and the director should tell you when it should happen.
Yeah.
And you might need to get clarification, like we were talking about with props. You might have to ask, are we talking about on this word, or are we talking about on this entrance? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if there's two things that usually happen at the same time, but maybe they could get off, like which one am I really going on? Am I going on the light thing that happened? Like, do the light and the sound happen at the same time no matter what? Or does the light thing get, yeah, does the light thing actually happen based on this other thing? Like based on a line or something, and that just usually happens to be at that same time.
Yeah, because a sound could, you want the sound to lead into the lights. So you do the sound first on the lights, and that's something you would go through with the designer on where they want it to go. And in my book, I use these little sticky tabs so I can move them based off of, because I'll put it somewhere and then they'll be like, oh no, I didn't like it there. Can you move it up? Yeah, sure. Can move it right on up. And then if it's really confusing, I'll, you know, I can like circle or draw an arrow. Like this word is the word to start it on because it's a timed cue that takes a certain amount of time. When I get my cues, I usually ask for clarification on what it does. Because sometimes they'll just be like, cue here. And I'm like, okay, but what does it do? Is it just like it's slightly adjusting the lights a little bit, or is it bringing up an area? It's like, I want to know what it's doing so that I can look up and be like, yep, it did what it was supposed to do. So that's all, not all people can give you that. They might just be like, yeah, put it here, put it there. It's good to ask for clarification, for sure. Thank you. Yeah? Yeah.
So basically, you're talking about all the things that are going on. You could be talking about a sound, radio, lightning, thunder. It could be lighting, lights up, lights down, flash. It could be a blocking move by a particular actor. And your universal time standard is the words in the script, and you're tying all these cues for these different types of actions to a particular word.
Yeah.
Period.
Or I mean, there are times when I've written in my call book, like there might be a specific sound or lighting cue or something that happens on this move. So I then have to watch, or it's like a visual, like door shut. And so, like in your call book, you might have, and like you prep your sound board operator, you know, like sound 25, visual on the door shut. And then they know, like, all right, that sound cue is based off of a visual, like a movement that's happening.
And I would clarify that we are not calling actor movements at that point. The actors are dealing with their movements. We are calling all of that other stuff that you mentioned. Well, unless it's an entrance based on something happening on stage that they can't see, or did you have another idea?
No, yeah, yeah. It's like unless you have like an ASN there to be like, okay, they're good to go.
Right, they might need to enter when a candle is lit over here.
Yeah.
But, like, they're off stage and they can't see the candle.
Yeah.
So then you might be cueing them, like, candle is lit, go.
Yep.
But that's less usual. Usually they are listening for something to enter.
Yeah. But we could probably just go into the next slide, because most of this that we've been talking about is has to do with the show
the
itself.
Next is the show. It's the baby. It's here. and this is when you're going to have a lot to. So it kind of starts off with you're usually going to be the first one there, and you're going to have a list to do before the show even starts. Whether that's like checking that you have a sign-in sheet and all the actors are signing into their sign-in sheet. If there are things that need to be preset on the stage, you're making sure that those are happening or that your actors who have to do them are doing those things. A lot of places want you to check in with the box office. Here, they also have a board member on duty that you need to check in with, a house manager, and make sure that you're all on the same page and you're all operating with the same cues. You know, like, I'll flag you and then I'm going to run up and then you can go on or whatever it may be. So there's a lot to do before making sure that everything is in order. And then once everything is set and the show is happening, that's when like your call book comes in, and usually you're going to be sitting up in a booth. The booth here is right behind you. And usually you'll have a light board operator and a soundboard operator. That's not always the case. I've done shows where I've done everything. It's magic.
I love
and those cues are right on time. But so then once you hit the show, during the show, the first thing that you should do is time it. You want to kind of keep track of how long they're going. It's important to keep track so that you can relay those onto the administration or the director or whomever is going to be in your production notes, which will come later. Topics include when to call cues. So some people put in there, kind of like what we were talking about, like that's on a visual, like that's on that door slam, or like this is on this specific line. And in my call book, I will highlight and I'll write the cue number, and then on the other side of the page, I'll have specifically like on this line, blackout, blah, 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 like whatever the notes may be on there. The best thing to remember when you're doing your prompt book is that you want it to be where if something happened and you weren't there, that someone could come into the booth and they can look at your notes and be able to call that show without you. That's never going to happen because you're going to be the stage manager and you're going to be there, so it's fine. But in the event, you never know. Or maybe you have to go on for someone. Who knows?
And there are, you know, there are shows where there could be a planned absence. You know, I've called a show for somebody who, you know, was totally available for the entire run except this one night when, you know, their brother was getting married or something, you know. And so sometimes there are those planned things, and it's good to watch the person call the show and then, you know, look at their script, see if you have any questions. And because it really is hard to just cold call a show like that.
Yeah.
Doing? Are you saying it out loud?
Yes.
Are you on microphone?
We'll do an example in a second.
So, yeah, so typically you'll have like a headset and you will be telling your board operators like standby for cue, la la la, and then la la la, cue, go.
And when
so
you say go, they hit the button.
Push the button.
Yeah.
And so you give them a prep like, you're going to push a button, Sarah. Now push the button. And so that's kind of like,
it's like, wake up, stop looking at your phone, stop watching the show.
Yeah. And if there's like a huge gap in between cues, like I've had where it's like, all right, now we have 16 pages, still my next cue. Then I'll give them like a warning a page before to be like, wake up.
Yeah,
stretch your fingers.
I write those, like, I put big arrows saying, like, cue's coming up next page, so that I am like, yep, it's coming up. I know it's coming. So that I'm ready to tell them that it's coming, because they don't have scripts in front of them.
What
happens if an actor is gone?
During
unexpectedly or expectedly?
Both.
I guess typically, in a lot of contracts, it's the stage manager's job to fill in, or if there's some sort of an understudy within the cast.
It also depends on the character that they're playing. If it's a smaller role, is it something that you could divide the lines up amongst the other actors that would feel comfortable? I had a show where I had an Annie double day performance, a matinee evening. Annie went on first show, too sick, could not go on second show, did not have an understudy, picked a girl out of the orphans, and she went on with the script in hand. Because the production manager wouldn't let us cancel the show. So in that case, we had to pick somebody and be like, you feel comfortable doing this?
Yeah.
We'll hold your hand. Like, everybody involved was like, yep, okay, we got this. We'll help you out sort of scenario. So it's good. Usually the group of people has to kind of join together in arms in that case. But it's very, very unlikely that somebody just doesn't show up. And that's why you check your sign-in sheets. If somebody isn't there by the call time that you have, like an hour before, call them immediately. Be like, are you coming? I had somebody show up to a show 5 minutes before the show started. But I knew she was coming late because I had called her. And she was like, oh, shoot, I'm on my way. So it's like very important to check your sign-in sheets and call people so that you don't have that happening.
And some shows understudy. I mean, some shows are, you know, have complete understudies or have understudies for all the main characters. And if somebody is not feeling good, hopefully they have, you know, the day before. I mean, hopefully as soon as they know that they might not be able to go on, they've alerted you. You've alerted the understudy. And then you might do a put-on rehearsal where you are able to rehearse, like, all of the scenes that they're in or key scenes that they're in so that they can... You know, however prepared you are as an understudy, it's not the same as, you know, actually doing the scene the day that you're going to be doing the scene. And so you will try to get everybody together, as many people as you can before the show, to run the key things. And so that's sort of the best case scenario. In the Gilbert and Sullivan Company, it's an opera with 35 actors. We have understudies go on all the time. I mean, not like every performance, but pretty much every production, almost every production, understudies go on. Because it's a huge cast that runs for a month in March. People get sick, you know, and then they can't sing opera because it turns out that's hard when you're sick. I don't know. I don't sing opera at all. So, but yeah, so the best case scenario is that you do have something like that and you have a plan in place like that. On the other end of the prepared, you know, on the other end of the preparation spectrum from somebody just doesn't come, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when going to school, that was one of the things that they told you, was that be prepared. That used to be like a thing stage managers would do, be prepared to go on as them. But I've never ever experienced that in my whole of stage managing. And I feel like it wouldn't, I don't know, I don't think the performance would be worth people seeing that just like this person come on with a script, you know, a script in hand, if that's the case. It's like I don't know if that's maybe like an outdated thing of stage managers being prepared to like be any character in the show, because I've never went to a show where I've experienced it either. So it's just like, I don't know what, maybe it came from something back in the day, but yeah, nowadays usually it's musicals, you have understudies. Straight shows, it can be kind of like, is this person a character that could be divided into other people? Or do we need that scene? Can we skip that moment and move on to a new moment? But those, hopefully, you know well in advance of the performance so that you can kind of fix it. Do you have
a decade or so ago, I used to tour with a little show called Rent. And on one of our tours, a virus was going through the cast, and there were, for Mimi, there were two understudies on the tour, and they were all sick. And so it did get to the point where we were setting up for one of the shows, and the stage manager was running through Mimi's performance. That would have been the weirdest show ever. But it didn't happen.
Okay, good.
But yeah, it does, things like that do exist.
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
Again, there was a performance where the director actually had to go on for the lead male. It was okay, awkward as crap, but the student female that he was opposite of, they adjusted to make it appropriate. But yeah, that actually did happen.
Yeah.
I would actually say that's probably more typical. The director has watched it. They know it. They probably like did the whole show in their living room in front of the mirror when they were thinking about blocking. There are some directors you can tell that that's their preparation process.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're also they're not like doing something during the show. Yeah. The stage manager is doing something during the show. So if you have a stage manager go on, who's doing that?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I had that one time. A director, we had this, he was a smaller ensemble character, so he just did his spoken word parts and didn't do anything else. But yeah, the director went on for the one show because the guy literally had one performance that he couldn't make it to. So he was the character for that one show. So, but we knew that going into it. So we had plans for it.
I'm going to just take a little skip back to your pre-show duties because I just thought of something that I wrote down and I didn't look at. Another job that you'll have before the show is preparing the actors to get into places. So typically you're going to have to give them, like, you'll decide what works best for you, like a 15-minute and a 5 and a 2-minute places. Or 10, 5, and places, whatever will work best. But it's going to be your job to let the actors know in the green room when to get backstage. Get ready.
Oh, yeah.
Get set.
And then also you may or may not have to do a light check beforehand, depending on the space. Just run through them quick. Be like, oh, one of them burnt out, but it's not like a super important one, so I'll just put it in my performance report, and that's what she'll talk about next. Yeah.
What if it isn't important?
Then you replace it.
Yeah.
You get your ladder, you tell the front office that you might have to hold for a second, and or hopefully you do it early enough. At TRP, we do light check like 90 minutes before the show.
Yeah.
So we have replaced lamps, you know, before the show. And typically we will let the front of house know that there is something going on and, you know, let them know, do we expect to open on time? It should be totally fine. Or, you know, we may have to hold the house for just a minute while we get the ladder off stage. We have spare lamps, you know, hopefully your theater has spare lamps for the follow spot and for the instruments and all of those things. You can do, that's why you check these things not 2 minutes before.
Yeah,
the house
this is well open. Before yeah. house open. So,
yes.
Pre-show calls for actors, fight call.
Yes. Those are very important to have too. If you have a show with fight in it, you should always do a fight call before every show. Even if it feels like redundant, like, oh, we should know it by now. It's like, no, you should do it. You have them do it slow, half pace, and then normal. And then call it good. Just so that just in case you have to readjust something. It's like, oh, we're a little too close to this couch right here. When I do my fall, I'm going to fall and hit my head on the couch. Like, can we make sure that we're here during it? It's just important to make sure everybody's in the space and feels good with it every show. Woo, that's left.
And you may have a fight captain in the cast who is
usually one of the actors.
Yeah, who is one of the actors who can help you supervise that. Yep.
But it's very good to like be like, fight call, everybody.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Get on the stage.
What I typically do on my sign-in sheets is I'll put, like, a fight call time and then a normal call time. Mm-hmm. So anyone that's involved in the fight has to be here at whatever time. Everyone else show up at this time. And then it's also important to know, like, the house opens 30 minutes before or whatever it is. So then are you going to give your actors enough time? Some actors like to walk every line before the shows. Mm-hmm. There is a fight call in some shows. If you have to change instruments or whatever.
Yeah.
So when you pick the call time to allot enough time for the actors to do what they need to do before the house opens, and then once the house opens, they have to stay
backstage
in their little green room.
Also with, like, weapons. I usually do a weapon call where we just fire it once to make sure it's, one, working, and two, the actor has gone through the process of loading it and seeing that it's empty and it's not. It's safe. So I do that as well before the show.
Any other questions about the show? No? Performance report.
So this is really an extension of rehearsal reports. because you are at the performance and the designers are not. So you want to be, except that instead of sharing things that are added, you're sharing things that got broken. So typically what you're sharing is things that got things that got broken, things that are running out, if it's like a prop food or something like that, or a piece of paper that gets crumpled or something. If it's something, but especially if it's something perishable that you can't just buy all of at the beginning of the run, then you might need to put a note like, you know, running out of persimmons, or persimmons all went moldy. So, you're putting those things. You're putting follow-ups on maybe previous issues. So if there was some kind of an issue, like something broke, and the designer, you know, attempted a fix but isn't sure, you know, if it's 100% going to work, or tried to solve some kind of a problem, like the latch has been sticking, so they went in and they did something to it, you can say, yep, latch opened great tonight. So some kind of a follow-up to previous issues. You can include... If something happened in the house, if like with the audience, typically the house manager will also be doing a report, so you don't necessarily need to include those things, unless they somehow involved the actors or the production too. If you hear audience comments, you know, the dialect coach might like to hear that someone from Scotland thought the accents were great, if it's a Scottish show or something, and they don't usually get very many notes, so you know, you can see if they're still reading, and then the runtime, because the runtime sometimes is sort of a proxy for the director on, is the show changing a lot? You know, the director, over a long run, the director would like to know that the show that they directed is still the same 3 weeks later. And so one of the one quick proxy they can use is, you know, is act one still about an hour one, or is it suddenly like an hour 10? Like, what the heck happened? And sometimes you do expect it to be added. In a comedy, you expect time for laughs and things like that. But yeah, if it starts fluctuating wildly, sometimes that can be a sign that there's an issue. And then the theater company would like to know that you are ending intermission promptly and things, starting the show on time and things like that. So that's why you include those things. And then finally, after the show, you probably have a post-show checklist, things that need to be washed or returned or replaced. Checking if there's any costume repairs, if there's any like maintenance things that need to happen, like the shirt with the blood on it has to be soaked overnight, making sure that those things happen. And then just checking in with your backstage crew and the cast to see if there were any issues that weren't evident from you watching from the booth, because things can happen backstage, or maybe you heard a thump during the show and you want to know, like, what was the thump? Yeah, like, did a... Was it a one-time thump, or was it like an issue we need to address? Like, what is the... So just following up and checking in with everybody, you know, because then you can sometimes catch those issues. They're like, oh, my skirt's starting to get a little tear. And you, you know, can catch that before it's like, my skirt fell off. So, yeah, that's performance reports. Any questions on those? We're getting pretty close to the hands-on part. We only have one more slide.
Super fast. I mean, the strike is at the end of the show, and usually the technical director is in charge of that, but sometimes you'll have to facilitate where people go, because the actors don't know the technical director that well. They haven't really experienced them that much, maybe tech week a little bit, so they're going to come to you, be like, where should I go, what do I need to do, and just be like, yeah, here, hold on, let me find something for you to do, like, you can take this apart, or that sort of thing. So it's just kind of helping things go smoothly and quickly. And then collecting scripts if you need to collect scripts. I usually start collecting scripts once the performance is opened, if people are comfortable giving them up, because some people are just like, I don't want it once we've opened show. They just feel like it's a crutch to them. If they keep revisiting it, they just want to get it. I'm like, I'll take any scripts once the show's opened, but I want them all by strike. And that's pretty much it. I don't think there's anything else to it at the end. Saying your goodbyes, mourning the show.
So we have examples of all of the types of paperwork we've talked about out on the tables over here. They're kind of sorted by which of us they belong to. So if you can make sure... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
A couple of things that came up made me think that what you really need to be working with detailed-minded, responsible people. I mean, if they don't call you back, or...
Yes.
And what can you say about that and the role of personality in putting together a good crew? And who do you look to work with and who do you maybe realize there are going to be trouble ahead?
I think as far as for each theater, feedback is usually kind of given at the end about your experience with who you've worked with. So if you work with like an actor that shows you put in your reports they're late all the time, like they're not very responsive, then the theater knows that going forward, and they can be like this. They come to auditions, the director's like, "Oh, I want to work with this person." They're like, "Well, here's what we know: they come late, they're not responsive, they do it, but they act fine enough, but." Go into it knowing these things. And some directors, they don't care about that. They're like, okay, that's fine, I know that. And they'll still work with them. But some are like, okay, that's good to know. I don't want to work with somebody that'll come in late all the time. So we don't pick who we get to work with, at least for our stage managers. So unless you're with the audition process, which sometimes we are, sometimes we're not. And you can put your two cents in, be like, I've worked with this person before, sort of thing. But, yeah, it's just, you just kind of have to work with what you get, sort of thing. You don't get to pick who they are.
Well, it sounds like it's more than just the actors, though.
Yeah, I mean, the technicians.
All these different,
yeah. It's a lot of wrangling.
The props.
Yeah.
I never realized there was so much going on behind. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So how are, the other technicians and, the backstage people and the light and sound people, how are those people chosen? Is it, the director or is it the place that's bringing it or is it...
It depends on the place. it's like, this. Here they have volunteers that they'll, sign up. They'll be like, I want to work on that show. And some places, they'll... find them for you. I very rarely had to put out a thing saying, hey, I need somebody for this. Or the director will know somebody. Somebody will know someone and they can contact them and be like, yeah, you want to work on this with me? Sure.
That's also something you can do in those early production meetings,
yeah.
Is decide if you're going to need a running crew,
yeah.
And that sort of thing, so that you can kind of start looking to find people willing to volunteer their
time.
Yeah,
if it's like a small show that you're like, oh, I don't really need people backstage, don't worry about finding me anybody. Or if it's like a show, it's like, I need three people backstage at all times. Start looking now at the beginning of the process. Or sometimes you'll have more people than you need and you're like, all right, what can I have you do?
Yeah.
You don't have that much. But usually you're not the one finding them. But you can certainly be like, hey, I've got this excellent person that I love to work with. Can they be my assistant stage manager? Can they run this light board for me?
Yeah.
And I don't think any theater is going to be like, no.
You were happy with
how them? Dare yeah. you actually have a person ready to do this job?
I just know, through my experience, a lot of times it's dependent on the cast. And as Bree was saying, you'll figure it out as the rehearsal process goes, what you're going to need, who you're going to need. Sometimes you have a huge cast, and you've got people that are able to assist. A lot of times with working with here, it's location and where people are. I mean, it's like you might need somebody in that tunnel passing something through to someone, and you just can't, the actor that's going off that bump can't get to it, so you do need a physical person to hand it off. Do you use another cast person? Do you use an ASM? Food-heavy shows is another thing. I mean, it's if your ASM is in the kitchen a lot, prepping food, getting stuff going, you're going to need somebody else to assist if there's a lot of pieces moving. I mean, if people, depending on where people are coming and going and what they're doing, you might, one ASM, you might just have actors helping. I mean, it's really kind of, that rehearsal process just gets you so much information. But obviously, as soon as you can get your people in to help and know what they need to do, especially in the sense of an ASM or your actors, then the more you're going to be able to get things going, and so that once you get on stage and in your back, you're able to, everything's able to move smoothly.
Yeah.
So what if someone gets hurt while they're either practicing or during the performance?
theaters will typically have a policy on that. You know, they may have an accident report you have to do. They may have, you know, they'll have different things with insurance that they have. You know, they may carry, they'll have insurance policies typically that protect actors who get hurt during, like, an actual activity of the theater. The building you're in may have policies about that.
And I guess depending on, like, what the injury is, like, we had a show last summer where one of the actors sprained their ankle partway through rehearsals and just did rehearsals on crutches until they could walk, and then by the time we opened, they were fine. But it kind of depends on what it is and what the theater's policy is.
Definitely something that you would report about so that people know it's happened. And then if it's like a case of this person will now have to go on with a crutch, if it's during performances, it's just, and I guess you could almost ask the director if they want them to find something period to walk on instead of a crutch, a cane. Can they walk on a cane and make it a character choice, you know?
Or are they injured to the point where you have to replace them? You know, maybe it doesn't
work. Need to replace. I know the show that the Chameleon did, they lost their actor like a week before they opened and they had to replace him. But they found somebody who had done the part before. They came in and learned it that week and opened the show. So it's like, sometimes you just have to figure those things out on the fly. That's kind of the fun of live theaters. It's things happen. Every show is different. Nothing is the same. So.
In terms of a stage manager's responsibility, it's always been my understanding that, you know, once you get into tech, or once you're done with tech, the show opens, that the person who's kind of driving the performance is, you know, moves from the director to the stage manager.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had any experiences where you have a director who has wanted to keep directing? Wanting to give notes during performances, wanting to, you know, change things, and how did you handle
that?
How do you deal with that dynamic of,
I think that it's tricky, because I feel like as much as it's your baby, it's also their baby.
Yeah.
And I think a conversation with the director, just to say, like maybe, hey, we got this under control, like, unless there are any, like, huge dramatic changes that needed to happen. It's a very hard area, because you don't want to, like, offend them, but then you also, it's your show, and so you have to maintain integrity and that sort of thing. That's tricky.
I'm trying to just remember. I know I've had it happen before, but more in the case of, like, delivery of line. Like, nothing super dramatic, and if I felt like the actors were feeling discouraged by it, I would make sure, like, that they know that what we did through tech is what show we want to produce and do. And there are notes sometimes that the director will give me to give them, and I'll decide which ones I want to give them based off of what we've produced. So there's, like, an actor who every night, he was just getting more and more dramatic in this role and, like, really taking away from the scene, and I felt like it had really steered far away from us. So I took the note and I went in and I told him, hey, you need to, like, cut back to where you were before. The softness of the scene really gives it the emotion that you need. You can't, like, the more dramatic you get, we really lose all those moments that we got during Tech Week. And the actor's like, oh yeah, thank you so much for the note. It was like, I didn't realize I was getting, like, so over the top. So, like, those notes are important, I think, to have and take those from directors. But then there's some, like, notes where it's like, can you go stand, like, over there on that side of the stage for that? And then you're like, no.
It comes with a lighting problem.
It's like, we have specific zones of lights, and yeah, it's like, this is the play. Like, once it's opened, you can't change more. And yeah, like, some directors could be offended by that, but just, it's like, this is what we're doing, because this is what we produced during Tech Week. And
is there a point at which you would go
to someone else? If I mentioned to them, like, hey, like, giving them notes still is kind of discouraging. It makes it seem like they're not putting on the show that you want. And if they keep giving notes, yeah, I would absolutely, like, tell the production manager or artistic director, be like, hey, I just wanted you to know that they're still involving themselves in a, like, not a good way, in a negative way. And I don't think you should feel bad for doing that, because they should know, so that they know working forward with them, do they need to kind of keep an eye on this director when it comes to the actors, that sort of thing.
I think we should, for time purposes, move to looking at the scripts, but we are all here. So whatever other questions you have and think of, yeah, just ask us. We're right there, and you may get a better answer with some of the stuff in front of you, too. So, yeah.
I'm sweating. Look at that sweat.
I'm going to.
It's so sweaty.
I'm going to close this down.
I'm going to pee super fast. I'll be back with my kids.
No.